The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Joining us today, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we are so happy to be a part of Gary Null's Progressive Radio Network, myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. And we bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Monday at 1 p.m. And we love you to join us. We love to hear from you. We get so many emails from people all over the world. It's very exciting to be doing radio that is also available 24/7. And that's what's so great about Progressive Radio Network. If you have trouble joining us at Monday at 1, you can just join us anytime. And not only us, but any broadcast that you hear right here on Progressive Radio Network. And today we're so happy to have as our guest Kate Mendenhall. She is the Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Farmers Association of New York, commonly known as NOFA. And Kate first explored organic farming during a two-year tour as a volunteer on organic farms internationally, everywhere from Mexico to Japan. After returning to the U.S., she began working on policy issues with the New York Sustainable Agriculture Working Group. She participated in the Cornell LEAD Lead New York Program for Agricultural Leadership and became familiar with all aspects of the state food system. In 2006, Kate joined NOFA New York as the project's coordinator, developing educational programs for farmers, gardeners, and consumers. She became the executive director in 2009 to continue NOFA New York's work in statewide education and advocacy that aims to build a sustainable regional food system. And thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. How are you doing, Kate?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Now, there's a lot of issues going on right now. I don't know if you heard Gary. He ran over a little bit, so some of our listeners might have heard the end of his show. And he had on Jeffrey Smith, who, of course, is working so hard in terms of educating people on the GMO issue. And I know that interestingly enough, the only way to truly avoid GMOs right now is to choose organic. So is that stance going to continue?
Well, that is the case currently. Organic agriculture does not allow any GE seeds or animal feed to be used. So we have tried a few efforts in the past to pass GE labeling in the U.S., but as the guest on the earlier show mentioned, it's been very hard to push any of that through in the U.S., even though they have been able to do some of that in Europe. But in the U.S., so far, it's the best way to avoid GE. Currently, 40% of the corn produced in the U.S. is genetically modified and 80% of the soy. So that's a very high percentage of processed foods that likely contain genetically modified organisms.
Yes, it is, and that's another reason why organic is so important. And let me give you a little bit of my background with NOFA, because I have been involved with NOFA since its inception, And I sat on many sustainability conferences way back when, while NOFA was establishing organic regulations, which I think actually, since the USDA has taken them over, they have substantially weakened the original outline that we had of what we deemed organic. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, you know, a lot of farmers and many NOFA New York members were involved in the writing of our national organic standards. So for the most part, they are really good standards. The problem comes with on a national scale and the organic market growing at such a rapid pace that industry wants to get involved in this market share. So there are big corporate players trying to get a piece of pie, and you know, there's always pressure to weaken the standards. But we have quite a few watchdog agencies that watch those standards, and organic integrity is very important to NOFA New York and the other regional NOFAs and also our national advocates and National Organic Coalition. Many of our farmers follow the organic standards and then go to a much higher level. But the standards do put everyone using the word organic and at least a base playing field that is equal across the country. While NOFA New York always had very high organic standards, not every agency was compared to itself. So it did differ on what the word organic meant across the country before we had national standards. So I think overall they're a good thing, but it's very important that we watch them, that the organic program is funded so that it can do its job in D.C., and that the USDA National Organic Program follows through with its requirement to be ISO audited as well, which is a process that they're working on right now.
Well, I am so happy that someone like you is really involved with sort of protecting our NOFA established standards. Did you attend the wonderful gathering that we had on Long Island a couple of weeks ago?
No, I was so sad I couldn't attend, but it sounds like it was a fabulous event, and I know there was a lot of NOFA New York supporters there from the Long Island chapter, and we gained quite a few new NOFA New York members, so it was great to hear that it was a very good and well-attended event.
You know, it was very exciting to me because I did give a presentation there, and I am also giving a presentation at the yearly conference, which is up in Massachusetts in August. Mm-hmm. And I also invite listeners to go to nofanewyork.org or wherever we have announcements about that upcoming conference. You can help us with that, Kate. But what was exciting is there were over 500 attendees, and, you know, it was put together at rather short notice, to where we really started putting out the information about the conference. And it was on a Friday, when you think a lot of people have to actually take off from work. So I think it surprised everyone, the event promoters, the presenters like myself, and many of the attendees. The classes were so packed, the doors had to stay open, and people were dribbling out into the hallway. I mean, that was exciting, because that means all of us, so many people, and we don't get the press coverage, of course, except on radio shows like Progressive Radio Network, of how big this movement is.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting to see that our winter conference continues to grow, the NOFA summer conference continues to grow, events in the city are always growing and really well attended, so people are just really interested in where their food's coming from, and there's so many great organizations in New York State now looking to link consumers to healthy, organic, and sustainable food, so now is the time.
Now, let's talk about you, Kate, because you have certainly put your life's energy into these concepts. What made you feel drawn to organic farming? Did you grow up on a farm, or did you learn about it in school, or what made you focus so much on healthy foods?
Uh-huh. Thank you for asking. I grew up in a small rural town in Iowa during the farm crisis. So I didn't have the opportunity to grow up on a farm. I wish I did. But I did grow up in an agriculture community, and I watched as so many of my classmates moved into town off of the farms. And when I got to high school, I was now surrounded by really large corporate farms. There were hog confinements going up all around my town, and I just knew that there had to be a better system for agriculture, and I really felt a loss of the culture of agriculture. And so I went to college in Maine, where they have a very vibrant, thriving organic farming movement, and found the answer, I think, to rural America and our food system there. MOFCA is a really strong organization, which led me to the NOFAs, and I'm just so excited to be working on building this effort here in NOFA, New York, and working with our regional partners to show a different model for the direction that agriculture should be going.
It should be, and it sort of always was traditionally. I feel like the NOFA concept is a traditional concept of food management, which was always really people connecting to the earth and eating what is now called organic food. It used to just be called food.
Right.
And I think what's better now is that because of our knowledge about, let's say, all natural growing conditions that we can establish that can upgrade the level of nutrition of a particular plant, let's say, that's a great marriage of science and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than changing the genetic structure and causing complete havoc in the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be so complicated or expensive. Food in its natural state is really tasty and great, and organic food works with our local ecology and benefits both the environment and the health of its eaters and the people working in the fields. And there's some really great traditional plant breeding that's going on, and plant breeding has really come along in its technology so that we can develop new varieties that increase yield, that are resistant to different diseases and pests, and that we come to those varieties through traditional plant breeding methods, but in a quicker way than we have been able to do in the past. Cornell's doing some really exciting plant breeding work on organic vegetable varieties specific for New York and the Northeast, and there's other projects going on like that across the country.
And that is exciting, and I am a Cornell alumni, in fact, and I was there at the ag school quite a long time ago, probably when you were a baby or not born. But nonetheless, even then, they were very involved in agriculture, and they actually did both. They were working on genetically modified science at the time, of course, promoted by Monsanto and backed by Monsanto, and we were also doing a lot with more traditional techniques. I've always had a focus on medicinal herbs, so they were actually bringing in plants that could be edible and medicinal and grow in a more wild way in indigenous cultures around the world, and supporting just breeding techniques that could increase the nutritional level, let's say larger tubers on yam plants, mm-hmm. and things like that. So, you know, Cornell has certainly been linked to increasing our knowledge about feeding ourselves throughout time, so it's wonderful that they're still working on it. Go ahead.
Oh, not to say that they're not, and many other land grants are also working to grow the genetic engineer path as well, and obviously that's much better funded, and unfortunately public breeding programs like the one at Cornell are continually being cut from USDA funding, and it's a real problem across the country, and it's a real detriment to all of us as consumers, as it reduces our plant variety diversity and the kinds of plants that are out there and being grown today.
Well,
definitely something we need to keep watching.
Absolutely. It's so tremendous because so many things are just run by who gets the biggest bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who, you know, gets the most, that's who gets the most funding, and that's who gets the most voice to the public, unfortunately. And what the people who are promoting genetically modified speak about is the fact that something like traditional growing techniques, I'll use that word, meaning non-chemical organic techniques. I don't mean by traditional where farmers have been dousing the fields with chemicals, which really has been happening, let's say, for the last, 40 years only? And I don't feel that's enough time to call something traditional. So,
mm-hmm.
although, you know, where you grew up on in the farm, they probably were at that time already using heavy, not only mechanical, but chemical means of growing.
Mm-hmm. No, you're spot on. In the last 60 years since the end of World War II, really, is when the country started to shift, and we saw a shift to larger farms, more monoculture, and a reduction in working with nature and instead trying to control it with chemicals. I'm in total agreement that that is not enough time to relabel a system as traditional, and we really need to look back on the effective, traditional, diversified farming methods of the past and how we can implement new technologies that are very sustainable into that traditional knowledge before we lose it.
That's so true. Now, just because something's traditional, let me play the devil's advocate on the other side, it's not always the best technique. I recently heard an NPR-type radio show, might have even been here on Progressive Radio Network, where someone was talking about the fact that farmers in a certain area always burn the old crop every year, and that is not a good thing to do because it actually depletes the minerals from the soil. So even though that is an ancient traditional system, people who are working there, and I guess they were from Peace Corps and other groups like that, were teaching them that just sort of hoeing the old plant under was much better at establishing superior nutrient content for the soil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you bring up a good point, is that there's still a lot of need for research in how to work with traditional systems, what we want to take from traditional systems and modify into our modern farming systems, and what from traditional methods might need to be improved with other research that we found in other parts of the world or country.
So that's why it's so important that someone like you is in charge and really, you know, looking at these issues every single day, especially with your deep background. Now, what we're going to do is take a little break right here so Progressive Radio Network can let all our listeners know about some of the other wonderful shows that are regularly here on Gary Knowles Network, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the kind of hot, immediate political agendas that are going on that I really do think people should know about, such as the National Leafy Green Marketing Agreement and any other kinds of legislation that people could really take action on, perhaps by visiting NOFANewYork.org. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Radio Network.
Hello! This is Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host of Animal Magnet Pet Radio. You can listen live to me every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern for the best pet radio in America, Canada, and beyond. Hard-hitting pet issues, animal news, training tips, tricks, games, and quirky pet trivia, plus the A-list pet guests each week. Or listen anytime to past shows at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Listen to this show so you can be good to your animals.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Houston, we have a problem.
Lies, lies. You're telling me that you'll be true.
Roxanne Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
Rachel Trachtenberg for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art as life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination.
With co-host Julia Cunning.
Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Premiering in 2 weeks.
Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're joining you from ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, where you can listen every Monday, 1 to 2 p.m., or visit us on the archives by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, go to archives, and then go down to the T, because it's The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, or visit us anytime at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or www.naturalnurse.com on the web. Today, our guest is Kate Mendelhall, and she is the Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Farmers Association of New York, NOFA, New York. And the website is nofany.org. So thank you so much for being with us today, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Doing a great job giving us tons of really interesting information and background on how important NOFA is. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the current legislation that certainly might interfere with our ability to get really fresh organic food, such as the National Leafy Greens Marketing Agreement. I mean, that sounds so good. Who wouldn't want that?
Yes, it is a tricky title. Well, let me just start by saying that food safety is a really important thing, and NOFA New York believes that all food should be safe. Food safety is traditionally controlled by the FDA, but a couple years ago in 2009, in response to the spinach E. coli scare that happened a few years prior to that, some large leafy green companies, so like the companies that sell the bagged lettuce mix, for example, throughout all of the stores in the country, got together and with the USDA and put together a leafy green marketing agreement proposal. It would be a federal act that would be a quote unquote voluntary sign up for handlers, so the companies that sell these bagged lettuces as an extra audit for food safety. So it requires all of the farmers that sell to these companies to pay for a gap audit or some sort of food safety audit yet to be determined. So the USDA held testimonies and hearings all across the country. I participated in one in Syracuse in 2009 with a bunch of growers, both organic and conventional growers from across New York State, asking the USDA not to go forward with this route. It's a little bit confusing because it's being proposed in the marketing division of USDA. instead of going through the FDA. And the FDA is coming out with their own food safety standards. So how these two will interact and work together is very unclear. NOFA New York thinks that food safety should be something that we all follow and achieve, and all food should be safe, and we don't think that some food should be marketed as more safe than others. We also think that the Leafy Green Marketing Agreement will put small local producers at a disadvantage to some of these larger companies that have national power and people to run their record keeping and fill out all the applications for these sorts of audits and to pay for the kind of visits and audits that are required to get that sort of authorization. So it's unfortunate to see it resurface. The USDA just announced it last week, and we put out a policy action alert asking people to tell the USDA that we don't want this marketing agreement and to put forward comments. Comments can still be taken for the next 90 days.
And so to find out how to take action on this, people would go to nofany.org.
Yes, and we have a policy link that puts all of our action alerts, that records all of our action alerts, so you can get to that alert through our policy page.
Now, you bring up a very interesting point, because there are a lot of these laws, in fact, many of the so-called food safety laws, when you read them, and see, it's so tricky. It's like, you know, Newspeak, where they, in 1984, where they made up words that kind of mean the opposite of what they mean. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about some of these, when I read the language, and I actually open those bills and read the language myself, it certainly sounds like it could make someone who's, let's say, growing their own very, very safe food with no toxic chemicals whatsoever in their backyard and putting up a little stand in front of their house to sell it, like a small gardener who has a few acres and maybe has a couple of chickens, that they will actually not be able to sell their produce because they could never afford to get the correct licensures.
Right. One of the concerns about the National Green Leafy Marketing Agreement is that they tried this in California, and it presented a lot of problems for small growers. And crazy things happened, like requiring a dead zone around a field planted with vegetables. So that was just basically bare dirt was all that was allowed, and no wildlife or animals were allowed with a certain number of feet from the vegetables being grown. And while some may say that that could reduce risk, the highest food safety risk really comes from washing hands and following very basic, low-cost protocols for food safety. And what we really don't want to see is people moving away from farming in an ecological manner, promoting diversity and habitat. That's what is so great about farms and sustainable farms. And this Leafy Green Marketing Agreement just brings up a whole bunch of big question marks and is really going to create some difficulty for the small farmer to farm in an ecological way and still compete in the marketplace. And do our consumers really need one more label on their product?
Well, I think what you said that makes a lot of sense is the fact that when we look at some of these programs and laws, they don't necessarily lead to more safety. And I actually like to make an analogy to something like the FDA. They regulate pharmaceutical drugs. And yet, pharmaceutical drugs are the fourth leading cause of death in the United States. And that's according to published data in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So that was well studied, and those numbers actually have increased to a higher percentage of death, but through, you know, using things that are certainly highly regulated. So intense regulation does not necessarily lead to safety, and I think your point is well taken, that who needs to be regulated are these heavy-duty commercial growers, not the small-time farmer.
Yeah, what the Leafy Green Marketing Agreement is not addressing is the issue of these giant companies that are taking 50-plus farms growing lettuce, bringing it, trucking it miles and miles to one location, washing it all together, putting it in sealed bags, which is a closed environment, which increases food risk, and sending it all across the country. So not only are you taking a high food risk product, which is a cut leaf lettuce, because it has that cut in it where disease can enter, you're putting it in a closed environment, a bag, and you're sending it. You're mixing it with lettuce from many, many different farms, so we don't know where the food safety issue then came from, and we're shipping it all across the country. So to pinpoint a food safety risk becomes very difficult in that scenario, whereas on the local side, if there was a food safety problem from one farm packaging lettuce, sending it to regional health food stores or regular grocery stores or through their CSA, if someone has a food safety incident, they call, and that farmer knows exactly where their product is so they can get pulled off the shelf in a matter of, you know, less than a day.
Right, and I just think that they think of these names, like, you know, rather purposely to throw people off. I mean, who could be against leafy greens, you know, mm-hmm. and who could be against food safety?
Right. It doesn't quite tell the whole story. And that's what we're trying to do, is get the word out so that consumers know what's going on, because it's, you know, it's really going to end up to be a decision that we're all making in the grocery stores and in the markets of what does this new label mean, is it safe or not, and how does it compare to something that isn't labeled with this leafy green marketing agreement. So please send in your comments to the USDA and let them know that this isn't the way to go, that this solution is flawed and there's other ways to promote food safety.
Now, the best thing to do is just go to NOFA. You don't have to put a dash, right? Just NOFA.ny.org. NOFA.ny.org. And mm-hmm. I'm actually looking at the site right now. And it looks great. It looks nice and clean, and like you can get around it so easily. And I see right here what your current policy subcommittee areas include, and that's important. Like, for instance, what about the issue with Monsanto? That was, of course, Gary Null's content on the show right before ours, and I am a big advocate of Jeffrey Smith, Gary's guest for today. And what about this law that just passed about genetically engineered alfalfa, where they're just like releasing it with no testing and just unleashing it onto the world? What does that do? If I'm an organic farmer and you are, and we're really trying hard to keep our crops organic, and then the people right next door to us plant some of this engineered alfalfa, I mean, what is this about?
Yeah, this is a real serious loss for the organic community and for conventional farmers as well. It's a big question mark why this was passed. The environmental impact statement identified areas of why they thought alfalfa was not a good choice for GE, but companies like Monsanto had the seed waiting, and they wanted to put it on the marketplace, and so that pressure led the USDA to approve it. But alfalfa is about 93% of all the alfalfa planted by farmers in the U.S. is currently grown without the use of herbicides. So why we need an alfalfa that's resistant to herbicides is unclear, if most of the farmers in the country, both organic and conventional, are not using it currently.
It's not unclear. Wait a minute. I have to beg to differ with you there. It's not at all unclear. It's very clear, because if you sell terrible toxic chemicals and you don't have a market for them, isn't it clearly to your advantage to create a market for them?
No, right. I misspoke. It is clear. They're definitely
trying to be nice. It's cool.
Thank you. Trying to sell both their seed and the herbicide that goes along with it hand in hand.
Exactly. And what you're saying is that alfalfa is normally a very resistant crop. And myself, as a small organic grower, like I see, you know, you're an urban organic grower, so we're talking about maybe small areas. We don't have giant commercial farms. But I grow alfalfa in between seasons all the time because it's such a great nitrogenating kind of plant that brings nitrogen into the soil. But I don't think anyone I know bothers to spray their alfalfa because it's very disease resistant.
Right, and it's a really important pasture crop for many of our dairy farms here in New York State and throughout the Northeast, and it doesn't require many inputs. It's a crop that's used to transition farms to organic, and the real scare is that all of that non-GE alfalfa, the alfalfa that's been being grown without chemicals currently, will risk contamination from this GE alfalfa.
Now, what is, let's say you must keep up with both sides. Like, what are companies such as Monsanto and other producers of, let's say, genetically modified or genetically engineered alfalfa, why are they saying that we need that as a culture and as a group of growers?
I don't know. The statistics for what farmers need does not lean towards a need for GE alfalfa. There are places of the country that do have more weed pressure than others, but for the most part, it's not an issue for this crop.
Well, what we're seeing also, and I'm sure you know this is true, is we have enough experience now with GE crops to know what happens is that very, very quickly it causes the development of superweeds and superbugs and increases the need for the use of stronger and stronger chemicals instead of decreasing the need.
Right. That has definitely been something that we've seen throughout the last decade of increased Roundup crops. And they also lead to an increased use of herbicides, contrary to what Monsanto will tell you. So over the past decade, the Roundup ready crops that have really been hitting the market hard, such as soy, cotton, and corn, have led to an increase of 382 million pounds of herbicides in this country, along with a spread of herbicide-resistant weeds.
Right, and you know, I really wonder with how horrible that looks and what a really negative record it has in terms of increasing health and wellness on any level around the world, that it seems like even the people in charge of producing these, even though it may lead them to great profits, what about the environment for their own children and grandchildren, which are going to be on this planet? I'm not saying you would have the answer. I mean, I don't have the answer, and I've been thinking about it, you know, many, many decades.
Yeah, I think corporate accountability and linking connection to community and is really the question that you know, we're all asking ourselves, and how do we make corporations more accountable for their actions and decisions, because we will all pay for it in the future.
Well, let's also talk about another issue that I know that is really hotly debated, and people are being arrested and jailed for this issue, and that is distribution of raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I raised my own goats. I didn't raise cows, but I used to just milk the goats and drink it.
Right. And that is legal in New York State. If you own a dairy cow, you are allowed to drink the milk. In New York State, you can also apply for a raw milk permit and sell raw milk off the farm or at the farm, so consumers have to come to your farm and you can fill up containers that they bring. But it makes it very difficult for dairy farmers to participate in that market. And consumers really, really want raw milk, and it's a very healthy product. Farmers who have high milk quality, there's no reason why they shouldn't be selling their milk as raw. It's a very nutritious drink.
And what is the issue?
Well, apparently the pressure is coming mostly from the conventional dairy industry, that they see it as a threat to their markets. There's a very small amount of raw milk on the market, so I'm not quite sure why it's so scary, but that is where the pressure comes from. And, you know, I think it needs to be regulated in some way, but it can be done so in a way that's easy to get access, and that farms who have high milk quality are the farms that are allowed to sell raw milk. They're able to do it in states like California and Maine and Connecticut. There's lots of really great examples out there, and there's no reason why we can't figure out a way to make it happen in New York State.
Right, and it seems like people have resorted to putting together buying groups mm-hmm. and then call it a members-only association mm-hmm. rather than, risk getting arrested. So it's very, very, interesting, but also very, very strange, and it seems so anti-life. With yes. all the things that they sell on the market, such as toxic chemicals, artificial sweeteners, that are known, documented to cause very high levels of disease. They cause everything from high blood pressure, cancer, we even know the mechanism of action, through initiating inflammation. And yet there's very little regulation of those toxic chemicals and pollutants, and yet they try to regulate something that is just a completely wholesome, natural food. Which I'm not saying no one ever got sick from it. That is possible. If someone doesn't process milk correctly or lets it stand around on a hot summer's day or they use dirty pails, there's a possibility for infection, but that is probably a lower risk than what happens due to homogenization and pasteurization in terms of deleting the nutrients from the milk.
Right. And I've been drinking raw milk for 5 years now, and I've never once gotten sick, but I have gotten sick from eating dinner in a restaurant.
Exactly. So that's my point, that they mm-hmm. seem to be barking up the wrong tree, and when we really look at the motivation for any of these kinds of safety legislations, it seems to be stacked towards big agribusiness and against the small local producer. And maybe it has to do with the fact that, well, let me ask you, why do you feel that the organic movement is actually growing by leaps and bounds in terms of just regular people?
Well, I think, if we look around at our community, we see that health is an issue, and food is directly connected to our health, and with the rise in obesity and food safety scares and more information coming out about what kind of things are going into the processed foods and where are most of our industrial conventional meat comes from and the situations that animals live in, people are just more aware. There's been some really great documentaries that have come out over the past few years, like Food Inc., that have brought these images to the general public, and people are making themselves more aware and looking for alternatives and healthy ways to feed their families. And organic is just a really great option for many people. And NOFA New York is working as well. Part of our mission is to make sure that organic food is available to all. So we have a program, a food justice program, that is working with farmers to make sure that that organic food is getting into communities that don't currently have access to it. We're doing a pilot project in the greater Rochester area right now, and we're hoping to expand that across the state and work with other community-based organizations to help make that possible as well.
Oh, well, look to Long Island when you get ready for that, because I lecture all over, and one piece of resistance that I always get from any, let's say, mainstream audience is they go, well, we can't afford organics because it's so much more expensive. And yet, sometimes that's true on individual items, but certainly overall it actually is not true. Let's say sometimes broccoli, you could get conventional broccoli for 99 cents and organic broccoli for $1.25 or mm-hmm. something. It's a minor difference. And then if you figure in the difference of your health care, that the lower amount you probably have to spend because of the lack of pesticides and herbicides, in that case it's eminently actually much more cost effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you pay for it now or you pay for it later in other ways. And oftentimes going with a community-supported agriculture, a CSA option, or at the farmer's market, you can find prices that are even cheaper than the conventional fruits and vegetables in the mainstream grocery stores. I see that all the time in the Rochester area. So I really encourage listeners to try those avenues, CSA and farmers markets, to buy directly from the farmers or visit your local farm at the farm stand. It's a little bit more expensive because we're paying for a healthier product. The U.S. overall, as consumers, we pay a very small percentage of our income on food, so it's become a very low priority for us, whereas in other countries, they pay a much higher percentage on food. So making healthy food a priority for you and your family, I think, is a really good step in the right direction towards improving the health of of ourselves, our families, and our communities overall.
So that's probably true, and it's not an easy issue. It's a complex issue because I know that NOF in New York also addresses something like labor laws for farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes complicated because how do you compete? Even so much in the big chain stores of organic food is no longer grown in the United States. It's shipped here from China or Peru.
Yeah. Right. Some of it is. And we're in New York, we're really looking to close that gap from the amount of organic food purchased in New York City and the state overall and how much we can produce in the state directly. And how can we produce more in New York State to close that gap there so that more of it's coming locally? You know, when it's coming in from other countries where we're diluting a lot of the principles that organic is based on. NOF in New York and other organizations like ours are really working to help more farmers transition to organic and to keep more of their product local.
That is such a good idea. And one way I know is working with local restaurants, because if you get a chef that's involved, let's say, with a sister organization such as Slow Food, they're very interested in bringing organic food to the table. And I have had many people on this radio show, including a registered dietitian who works at a major facility and produces 4,500 meals a day and was able to convert her entire food program, not only for the inmates, because it is a prison system, and the staff, to all organic, but actually brought it in below budget of what they were doing in terms of feeding everyone processed food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so doable.
That's great. That's really inspiring, and I think it, you know, just gives another example that it is doable. It might be a different way of doing it, but let's get creative. This is important, and feeding our communities healthy organic food should be a priority.
Well, it was a change. Like, for instance, she had to rev up the kitchen, which was there, and actually start cooking from scratch again.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was much more cost-effective. We're talking about gallons, let's say, of soup versus making canned soup.
Right.
And she even figured in, like, the amount of time it takes to cook it and the energy used in cooking versus just opening cans, because then you have to dispose of the cans. So she figured in all those costs.
Mm-hmm.
And found that even at the large numbers, she was able to bring savings to the overall system. And then she also monitored the behavior of the inmates over several years and found that improved as well. So using NOFA techniques is totally win-win for everyone involved.
Great. Well, that's a great example. I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about production methods on the farm and looking at tradition and the good things we can learn from the way we did things in years past. And it's the same thing with cooking and using food. There's so many great traditional recipes out there. I love experimenting in my kitchen, you know, making my own cheese and yogurt and cooking with different kinds of vegetables. And it really can be very cost effective if you're buying directly from farmers and cooking your own food and doing things the way your grandparents used to.
And you have great programs with NOFA, such as new farmer training programs. If people ever did think, maybe we do want to get involved, how about a garden at every public school? That is so doable, even in the middle of the city. They could have, let's say, a raised garden outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't need much space. You don't even need any exposed ground. People are building raised beds on cement, and there's really exciting, innovative models that don't cost very much. It's one of our goals for our strategic plan is to help make that happen. And a lot of our organic farming and gardening members are working in schools right now to help support teachers in bringing that to their students.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. And we have been talking here today with Kate Mendenhall. Did I say your last name right?
You did.
And she is the executive director of Northeast Organic Farming Association. And, you know, just mention briefly before we go, first of all, go to NOFA New York. That's NOFANY.org. And, boy, I can't wait. I know that I'll see you at the big event in Massachusetts, right, coming up. That's something people can actually join in on.
That's great. Look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch. through ProgressiveRadioNetwork.org or NaturalNurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.